John, how you doing? That's a nice new door chime you got going there.
Yeah, thanks, DJ. I just had that installed.
Hopefully that door chime comes through to everybody so they can tell that we're hanging out in a comic book store here.
That's right.
How you doing this week?
Oh, man, doing great.
There's the textbook, John, open.
My enthusiasm knows no bounds.
No, it doesn't. No. Had a good week. I've had a good week.
Yeah?
It's been fun, yeah. Really? Been fun. Kids are home for Thanksgiving. Excited about that. Yep. Joe's home teaching me how to play Black Ops. So, I got my...
Now you got a gun and you can stay alive for more than 5 seconds?
John, I'm proud of myself. I killed somebody.
Oh, my God.
I killed somebody. And we had to go...
Those words are usually not uttered out loud.
I know, that's what's funny. No, it was great. We were playing online. He was still at school at the time, and we went in as duos. And I was laughing my ass off because I got into this gunfight with this other guy. Obviously, I won the gunfight, but Joe had to come over and revive me. So he's giving me meds. So we're standing.
I killed him with the last breath of life I had.
Yeah, he's giving me meds, and he kept throwing more meds at me so that I could give. I'm like, my screen's still red. I can't see. So, but I was pretty proud. By the end of the game, I think we came in fourth in that game. That was pretty good. Out of 50.
Out of four? Oh, okay.
No. It was really good. We had a really good time. It's a lot. Now I'm awesome. Starting to see the fun in it. So it's a really good time. Obviously doing that. Titans, we'll talk about that in a couple weeks. I can't wait to talk about that.
Yeah, I can't wait to get to this to after episode 8 because I want to talk about it again.
Yeah. I know.
And then not to get too far ahead of us, but did you see, I just saw a tweet today. Did you see who's going to be in episode 8?
No. I may have. What? Who?
We got Donna Troy. So
oh,
we're
yeah.
Gonna have Wonder,
yeah. Yeah,
yeah. We're going to have Wonder Girl.
Oh, yeah. There's so much stuff coming out. I read too much stuff, and it starts to ruin stuff. I heard about Donna Troy a few weeks ago.
See, I hadn't. I didn't know until today, so I was pretty stoked to see that because now it's really, you're really just missing Speedy and Kid Flash, and you have really the whole Titans team. So
I don't want to get into anything because I could spoil a bunch of stuff if anybody hasn't watched it yet, and we're not doing that.
Right.
So, but yeah, it's really good. If you haven't started it yet, or you're not on the app, or whatever. It's definitely worth it. What have you been up to?
Just a lot of work, getting ready for Thanksgiving, getting ready for Black Friday at the store. I did get, you already know this, but our listeners don't. So I finally got my 75-inch 4K TV installed and set up this week. And I got lost for about 4 hours in YouTube videos on Monday evening. Just, I went on vacations everywhere, man. I was in Europe. I was in Bali. I was a traveling fool on Monday.
Was it 4K video?
It was awesome. Yeah, nice. Yeah. 4K videos. Just a lot of drone flights flying over all these coastlines and cities. And it was awesome, though, man. I had a great time doing that. So
yeah, I was cracking up. You were texting me and stuff and asking how you do stuff. And that one issue you had with the 4K and... You said you were watching Wonder Woman from the 70s on your Apple TV,
right.
And it was coming through, and you couldn't tell the difference between that and 4K, and you're like, I want to know the difference. I'm like, what's the end game here? Why are we're working so hard for what? It's like, you're saying it looks great. Let's go with that.
Yeah. Well, I have to, me, I'm a perfectionist, or I'm anal when it comes to stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. No, that's part of the fun. I love that stuff. But that's why I was laughing. It's like some people are just like, that looks great, and they're done with it.
Well, yeah, we talked about this as well. And, not to always throw my lovely wife under the bus, but, we talked a few weeks ago about Daredevil and how, she couldn't tell the difference with the Atmos sound. And this was no different. We went from a 55-inch TV mounted on the wall to a 75-inch TV. And it was basically like, I don't see any difference. And it looks just the same to me.
Oh, boy.
I was like, oh, come on.
So you're saying your wife doesn't know the difference between one size and another size. There's a joke there. We'll leave that alone.
Which is good. That's good for me, believe me. But
we'll leave that alone.
Well, you know, and not to get too dirty, but I made that joke in the store too, because the 82-inch TV was about $5,200.
Oh, jeez.
And the 75-inch TV was just under $3,000. So, you know, my comment was, is 7 extra inches worth $2,200? And, you know, you really need a woman to answer that question because...
Okie dokie.
So.
All right.
And that's as raunchy as we'll ever get on the Bright Side.
Yeah. Okay. All right, yep. That's
unless we talk about Batman Damned again.
You're making me blush. That's what I was going to say. I was leaving that out. Oh, God. Okay. All right. So, anything else?
Nope.
Now I've lost my place. I don't even know. All right. Let's get into Stan Lee. We started last week, and I needed a week because some of the stuff that I've seen the stuff that's going on. Everybody... I listen to podcasts, listening to all the different things people say.
Right.
We've gotten histories and stuff like that. And why don't you start out? Because you know.
Yeah, so I'll just go into a real brief history of Stan Lee, and then we'll get into talking about the feels in a few minutes. But just a couple of words about Stan, and then I have some essential reading that I put together if you guys really want to do a deep dive into some of the best of Stan Lee's work. So... most of you already know, you know, Stan Lee spent his entire life working in comics. He started back in Timely Comics, which became Marvel Comics, as an editor in 1942. So he's been, you know, for pretty much 60 years, he was an active part of writing for Marvel. And then he stepped away, and of course, he became more of a promoter. And, you know, a lot of people just know him from his cameos and things like that with Marvel, but you know, he actually worked in the trenches for a long time, and really for about 18 years before he even hit his stride. You know, right around 1960, Stan actually wanted to quit comics. You know, he wasn't going where he wanted to go. You know, he always fancied himself as a novelist and wanted to write, you know, the next great American novel.
That would have changed so history.
For sure. Well, we don't know what he would have wrote, but
true.
But you know, wouldn't have been what we got. So, you know, he had actually made up his mind, you know, right around 1960 to go in and quit Marvel, and you know, he had a discussion with his wife Joan, and she urged him to basically before he quit, just to go and do one more story, and just to write whatever he wanted. If he was going to quit anyway, you know, just go in and write your story the way you want to do it.
Right.
And so he went back, he wrote that one story. That story was, of course, Fantastic Four number one, came out in 1961 alongside, or along with Jack Kirby. You know, they put this book out on the shelf. And basically, if you're listening to this podcast, you know the rest. You know, from Fantastic Four came Spider-Man, came The Incredible Hulk, Iron
yep.
Man, Thor. You know, you name it,
yep.
And we're not going to go down that list. I mean, it's too extensive, but I, you know, I wasn't sure if everybody knew some of that story, especially about, you know, basically wanting to quit, you know, because if he had gone in that day and walked away from comics, you know, who knows what we would have had.
You know,
obviously we had, at the time, DC Comics and we had Superman and Batman, and they were all very successful, but... you know, DC was a force to evolve some of what they were doing based on the success of Marvel. So,
oh yeah,
if Marvel wasn't there doing what they were doing, we don't even know what DC would look like today. So, you know, Stan Lee really affected both companies in a pretty big way.
Well, yeah, a lot of what he did, it affected the entire comic book world, how it changed things,
right.
And people adapting. You see success in one place and everybody else is trying to duplicate it and stuff like that. Like you said, my first time hearing him was obviously with voiceovers and stuff like that. And I want to say my first memory of him was Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends with, you know, Firestar, Iceman. And,
right.
I was talking to you last week. It's like when we found out that he had passed, I went on and bought the series on Apple. And he really doesn't even show up until the end of the first season of that. And I want to say it was the first time he showed up in Spider-Man and Amazing Friends doing voiceovers. I think it was the X-Men the one where he Spider-Man is with the X-Men and they go through all the tests and everything. He goes through the danger room,
right,
and stuff. But that was the first one that he first started, obviously, doing voiceovers. And then after that, he was a little bit more prevalent. That was in the 80s. I was getting older. I started to learn more and more about him. Obviously, he had been around, but I was too young. And then starting to learn more about him, you know, you see where he came from. And both of us growing up in art, I can't draw cartoons. We took, I don't know, you remember Mr. Crowley's art class in freshman year, and we had to draw cartoons. That was part of one of the things we had to do. And I struggled at that. It's like my area was always more realistic stuff. I like drawing stuff like that. And so cartoons to me were like, I was in awe of people like that. And whether Stan Lee was drawing, writing, I didn't know the difference. I just knew the name. I didn't really know Jack Kirby's name at the time. And then as we get older, I start learning more and more about the entire process of comics and what it takes. And, you know, then you learn more about Jack Kirby and stuff like that. And now here we are. It's like, you know, Stan Lee passes and you start to hear the stuff. And I won't get into that comedian that was talking bad about him this week. I don't even want to mention his name because I don't want to give him credit. Because that's just that if you talk bad about somebody like that or anything, why would you even talk bad about somebody else's what they like? If I like a painting on the wall, what do you kind of call me an idiot? That's me. If I like a certain, if I like horror movies, oh, you're dumb. You like horror movies. But why? It's somebody's taste. Never mind doing it during when people are, you know, dealing
in mourning.
Yeah, so
basically, yeah,
I don't but anyways, people trying to say, oh, Stanley wasn't this and Stanley didn't do it by himself. No, he didn't, but he had the charisma, the personality that pushed all of this stuff. And I was trying to think of something else that I could compare it to, and I came back to, remember Phil Restaino? We went to high school with him, and we went to school with another kid in art with us, with Wayne Chang. Wayne was awesome, an unbelievable artist. He would sit in the back of the room and just, you'd be amazed at the stuff he could draw. Realistic, impressionist, anything. He'd just sit back there and doodle. And he was an unbelievable artist. So was Phil. But Phil was, he was a character. He had all the personality in the world. A lot of people didn't even know Wayne would draw if you weren't in the classes that we were in, you know? And it's like, that's how I picture like Stan Lee. It's like he was the personality that pushed everything. And then without that, we don't even know the other people.
Right. Well, yeah, not to diminish Stan at all, because, you know, obviously he was a legend, but you know, you're right. He doesn't get anywhere. Well, he doesn't get nearly as far as he got without the likes of Jack Kirby and Steve Ditko, who are just as responsible for those creations as Stan. But like you said, Stan was the charisma. You know, he's the one that went out and sold himself and sold Marvel and pushed these things. And so he's regarded as, really the sole creator in the face of Marvel. Because he took that, you know, he went out and he took it for himself.
Right.
And, you know, these other guys who are equally as important, but aren't known at all unless you are a comic book reader.
Right.
My grandmother probably knows who Stan Lee is. She doesn't know who Jack Kirby or Steve Ditko are.
Well, look at
but
it.
That doesn't.
Look at sports. You know. I know who Peyton Manning is, but I don't know who the guys were on his line.
Exactly.
You know, but without that line, Peyton Manning's like, he's a grease spot on the field. It's like, if you don't have a good line, you're done. So Stan Lee was the face. And he, like you said, he went out there, he promoted it. And from whatever, I've never met him. I wish I had. It seems like he was pretty accessible. If you went to a Comic-Con that he was at, you could have walked up to him. From all reports,
well,
he was a super nice guy.
If you could get to him, yes.
Yeah, exactly. You know, well, if you had the time.
The crowds around him are huge. But yes, he's very accessible. Very accommodating. You know, you go through his line and you get up to meet him, and you really don't have time to say more than, "Hey, Stan, big fan, glad to meet you," and you get shuffled on your way. But that's not because he's not accessible. It's that, you know, the promoters are moving the line along,
right,
and yeah, trying to keep you.
There's only
keep
so much
going
time
because
in the day.
There's 4,000 other people behind you that are waiting for a signature too.
Right.
But by all accounts, he was very accessible and very, he loved his fans. He loved the people. And that's the other thing too. You know, he loved this stuff. He was a constant promoter of, you know, comic books in general. Of course, he loved Marvel and he loved his own creations, but he loved comic books.
Yeah.
And, you know, was just a promoter of everything that had to do with this.
And as a kid,
industry.
And as a kid, when you see a grown man, it brings validity to it for you as a kid. And then as you grow up, you're like, you know, he's older than us, so you're always looking up to him. Right. And hopefully we're doing that as adults for kids now. Obviously, I'm not saying we're Stan Lee, but my kids have seen me enjoy comic books. People come into your store and see adults enjoying comic books. I was in the store up here today, and it's, you know, day before Thanksgiving. Nobody has school. The comic book the store was packed. And there were kids running around. You know, we're trying to talk, and the kids are running around in between. Excuse me, pardon me. And it's great. But you want that. You want that to keep getting passed on. And to me, for me, he was the one that started it. My dad wasn't into comics. And it's, I have my own reasons for being into comics, and we don't need to get into that. But he brought that validity and, you know, kept it there. And then as you get older, it's just more and more promotion.
Well, even, you know, if I think back, it's probably the same as you as far as the first time I heard Stan's voice audibly was probably with Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. But I had known him through the comics, because I've always been a comic book reader.
Right.
And, you know, he always had his letters page in the back of all his comics. There was Stan's soapbox. And, you know, he always felt very accessible, even though you weren't in the same room with him and you weren't, you know, in his presence. You still always felt like, you know, kind of he was there and he was somebody that you could contact and relate to. And, you know, he was always part of things. So I was familiar with Stan from my first days of reading comics.
Yeah.
But
yeah, you always saw his name. You knew the name. It was an easy name. So you always,
of course.
Like, you're like, oh, I know that. So that's why when he showed up on Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, you're like, oh, that's Stan Lee. I know that.
Right.
You know? And it just, again, brought probably why I liked the show. It brought more validity to the show. Never mind liking Spider-Man.
If Stan watches it, then we must watch it too.
He's in it.
Right.
So, yeah. I hope they keep honoring him in all the Marvel movies going forward.
Well, and I think Ben Feige actually made a statement that they do plan on including him for the foreseeable future in all of their projects.
Oh, really? I didn't see that. That's awesome.
So,
that's great.
Yeah.
That would be.
So how they do it is, you know, like you said, what you talked about last week, it's probably going to be just, you know, his face on a poster somewhere in the back or, you know, something somewhere will be there. It may be a little bit harder to spot because it won't be a physical cameo, obviously, but they plan to have him somewhere in all of their projects going forward, or at least for a while going forward. So.
I can't even imagine the end of Captain Marvel. That's the next Marvel movie, right?
So right, and I'm sure he's in there.
But I'm sure they're going to have the, you know, in memory.
Oh, yeah, there'll be in memoriam.
Oh.
Yeah, it'll definitely be there.
Yeah.
Marvel actually, in their new solicits for next month's comics, they've got a memoriam on every cover.
Yeah.
For every comic they're going to have that month. So, you know, that's pretty cool, too.
Yep.
And then I don't know, you know, again, I don't know what books you've read lately, but, well, you've got Spider-Man, so we're going to talk about that later. But, you know, when Steve Ditko passed a few months ago, the next issue of Spider-Man had like a 3-page tribute to him.
Yeah.
And that was in every Marvel comic that week also. So I'd be very surprised if we don't see something similar for Stan.
I was thinking the same thing when I saw that.
Yeah.
All right.
All right, so before we move off of Stan, you know, I do have some things that you can go out and read. And don't worry, you don't have to have $40 million to go out and get these things. because they're all collections. They're all collections that you should be able to go into your store and order now. But these are some of the best ones, I think, based on some of his early work. So from the Fantastic Four, you have the Fantastic Four Epic Collection. You have The Coming of Galactus. And that obviously introduces Galactus, and it also introduces the Silver Surfer in those stories. And those are from about year 4 of the Fantastic Four, issue 45 to 56 or something like that. Obviously, there's other volumes of all of these titles, but these are the ones I think will be the best ones to go out and take a look at. The next one is the Silver Surfer Epic Collection, When Calls Galactus. Sorry, let me backtrack just a second. For the Fantastic Four, that's obviously along with Jack Kirby, did the art on that. The Silver Surfer Epic Collection, this is with John Buscema, who did most of the early Silver Surfer work, and also featuring Galactus and the origin of the Silver Surfer and where he got his abilities, and also some pretty good stories. The Thor Epic Collection, The Wrath of Odin, again, this is with Jack Kirby, and these are early Thor stories. And then there's also from Thor Epic Collection, To Wake the Mangog, and that's also with Jack Kirby. We've got the Captain America Epic Collection, Captain America Lives Again, with Jack Kirby. Obviously, the return, you know, Captain America was actually an older character that came out in the 40s, was created by Joe Simon and Jack Kirby, and Stan Lee brought him back in the 60s in Fantastic Four number 4, and brought him, basically, that's when the freezing and, you know, he got caught in the block of ice and obviously came back into the future. So this is from the early Avengers and Captain America stories. The next one would be the Doctor Strange Epic Collection, Master of the Mystic Arts. And this was with Steve Ditko, who co-created Doctor Strange with Stan Lee. If you didn't read anything else Doctor Strange ever, and you just read this book, you would read everything you needed to read about Doctor Strange. Really, really great. Really, really great stories. And then, of course, we can't finish any list with of Stan Lee off without Spider-Man. So there's two collections for Spider-Man. The first one is called Great Power, and the second one is called Great Responsibility. And this is the entirety of the work that was done with Stan Lee and Steve Ditko. Every story that they did together are in these two collections. And again, if you didn't read any Spider-Man ever again, except for those two books, that would give you everything you need to read about the character. So,
how much are those? This obviously, typically,
they run $34.95 a piece.
Oh, really?
Generally,
that's not bad.
Yeah, yeah. So not bad. A lot less than it would cost you to put those issues together.
Yeah,
you know, individually. But and of course, you know, Stan's list is extensive. I didn't have. There's nothing on this list from Iron Man or the X-Men, the Hulk. And that doesn't mean there's not great stories out there to read, but these are the ones I think, if you wanted to get some great Stan Lee, these are the ones you want to go out and look at.
Oh, cool.
And that's it for my Stan Lee list.
All right, and we'll have all that in the notes, so you'll be able to go back and see them in the notes. So send those over to me.
I'll send this whole document over to you, because I got professional this week and I wrote everything down.
Oh, nice. So look at you.
Now I can just send it off to you instead of having to text it and remember it all.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, that's awesome.
So
yeah. We're getting professional.
I know, right? 6 more weeks and we'll really have things down.
We'll have a secretary.
Yeah.
It'll be me, but we'll have a secretary.
Right.
All right. So you ready for, you got your other list? You ready for our comic book news, how we're going to spend my allowance this week?
I do, yeah. I've got my list. So
right. I actually saw kids in the store today with their allowance, so it was pretty cool. I thought of that.
Awesome.
I was like, hey, kids running around, I got my $10.
So, did you give them the link to our podcast so they knew where to spend their money?
No, but I looked at my son and I went, future listeners. He goes, you hope.
Right.
I was like, yeah. But yeah, so all right, let's get into that.
Okay, so starting with the Speculator Roundup this week, it's actually a pretty quiet week for Speculator books. The biggest the biggest DC covers this week would be the B cover for Justice League Dark number 5. That's the Clayton Crane variant. That's a beautiful cover and is already sold out in most places. And that's really the only book as far as the variant covers and the new issues go that had any kind of traction this week. It was really a pretty
short week,
slow week. As far as the on the speculator front, it was actually, there was quite a few releases this week, but that's really the only one that got a lot of traction and that I think that, you know, will sell out and you might have a difficult time picking up. There's some other great books that came out this week. There's a Rick and Morty, Pickle Rick number 1. There's an A and B cover for that. They're selling as a set for about $12, which is just about $4 over cover price. So I wouldn't say they're something that, you know, you should run right out and buy as a speculator. Of course, if you're a Rick and Morty fan, and who isn't, you know, Pickle Rick is, you know, is something that you want to go and pick up, I guess. But for the back issue books, there's two books to look at here. And these aren't necessarily even super old, but there's a series from Image called Dead Rabbit. And there's only been 2 issues so far. And issue 2 just came out last month, really just about 3 weeks ago. So this is a pretty new series. But on, I think, Tuesday, we got an email from our distributor, Diamond Comics, saying that there was a mandatory recall on all unsold copies of Dead Rabbit. And
was it with the lettuce?
Yeah, no.
So if
there's no E. coli scare.
Yeah, don't eat your comics.
Right. Don't eat the dead rabbit, but
don't eat a live one either.
Yeah, don't eat a live one either. But I guess if you're going to eat a rabbit, eat a dead one, but this book got very suddenly canceled and recalled. And what happened is there's a bar in New York City called the Dead Rabbit, and they put out their menu in the form of a comic book featuring a character called Dead Rabbit.
That doesn't sound... Oh, it's a bar. I was thinking a restaurant. I was going to say, so
it's a bar, and they do their menu, and their menu changes, I guess, every month, every other month, in the form of a new issue of this comic book. So they basically are suing Image Comics and the creators of Dead Rabbit. And they slapped him with a cease and desist, and they canceled this book, and they're pulling all the copies. So you really won't be able to find these copies on the shelf of any current store because they're not allowed to sell them anymore. Legally, they're not allowed to sell them. Now, what they do on the sly, you know, is up to these stores. Because I'll be honest with you, I had one copy of each of issue number 1 and issue number 2 left. And hopefully no one's listening, but I'm not sending those back. But
what do you mean? Hopefully no one's listening.
Yeah. Well,
I don't think you guess how this works.
Hopefully nobody in a position of power at Diamond Comics is listening. Let's put it that way.
Oh, okay. That was our one listener.
So these things instantly. You know, I went to eBay 10 minutes after that email came through. And the prices on these things were already shooting through the roof. Issue 1 and 2 is going for about $30 for the set right now. That was on Tuesday. I didn't look today. I expect it to just keep climbing. Because these things, you know how people are. Whenever something's canceled and has the words mandatory recall attached to it, you know, obviously the scarcity jumps through the roof on these things. These were not necessarily scarce. I mean, there's a lot of copies out there of 1 and 2. People were buying them. But, you know, you won't be able to get it anymore unless you go to the secondary market. So if you can find copies of these at a reasonable price, they might be worth snatching up just to hold on to and see what happens. In a month, it could be worth $4. Who knows? But
so buy them and sell them.
Right. But that is the definition of speculation.
Yep.
But yes, if you could buy them now, my recommendation would be to flip them as fast as you can and get rid of them, because I don't know what the long-term value is, but short-term value is pretty high on those 2 books. So
All right. That's
what I have for speculator books. Moving into the final order cutoff, and again, these are the books that have orders due on the following Monday. So this coming Monday, orders for these books are due. With that being said, you shouldn't have any trouble getting any of these books ordered if you go into your store. So for the DC variants, we've got Aquaman number 43. That's got a cover by Nicola Scott. The art for that is actually already available, and it's a really good-looking cover. So that is one I would recommend. Batman number 61 by Francesco Mattina. That artwork is not currently available. We may not see it till Sunday or Monday. For those that have been listening for the last couple of weeks, you've heard this guy's name multiple times. Usually when his name is attached to the cover, they're really good-looking covers, and people are after them. So of all the ones that have the potential to be a speculator book, that would be the one. You've got Harley Quinn number 56, variant cover by Frank Cho. He's been doing the Harley variants for about a year now. Very popular artist, and always turns out great-looking covers. You've got Justice League number 14 by Jay Lee, and you've got Teen Titans number 25 by Alex Garner. And that's it for the DC variant covers. For DC new titles, we've got Batman and the Outsiders issue 1. That's going to come with a regular cover, a blank cover, and a variant cover by Stepan Sejic. I don't know how to say his name, but he is also a very popular artist. His covers and his comic book. A lot of these guys that I've mentioned, Mattina, Frank Cho, Jay Lee, they're only known for doing covers. Most of these guys don't do any interior comic work. Stepan Sejic, might be Stefan, I'm not sure. He actually does covers and interior work. And he does painted artwork on his comic books, and they're beautiful to look at. So he's always a sought-after artist for his covers and his interior work. So you might want to get in there and get that ordered. And you've got Freedom Fighters number 1. That's got a regular cover and a variant cover by Ben Oliver. Moving on to Image Comics, the variants this coming week are for Spawn issue number 292. You've got a B cover by, once again, Francesco Mattina. And then you've got a C cover that's done by Mattina and Todd McFarlane. And both of those are open to order covers, so you should be able to get any or all of those. And then Image new titles, we've got Hardcore number 1. This says from the minds of Robert Kirkman and Mark Silvestri. So they're the ones that thought this book up, but they're not the creative team on the book. For those that don't know, Robert Kirkman is the creator of The Walking Dead. Also is the creator of Outcast and Oblivion Song for Image Comics. So generally the things he's attached to are, you know, have a big following attached to them as well. And a lot of his stuff gets optioned and picked up for TV. You know, The Walking Dead and Outcast are both on TV. I wouldn't be surprised to see Oblivion Song sometime soon, and wouldn't be surprised to see Hardcore. So obviously, if it gets picked up and becomes a popular TV show, issue number 1 is going to be the one to have. So get in there and get that picked up. And there is no Marvel on Final Order Cutoff this week at all. So nothing to talk about there. All of Marvel's books, for some reason, were on last week's order. And they'd have nothing this week. So So that's it for our Final Order Cutoff. And the books that you should go in. And like I promised last week, I am going to mention one more time, if you go into your store and you ask them to order any of these books for you, please go in and pick them up. It's only the right thing to do.
Nice. That's John's PSA.
That's my PSA. The more you know.
The more, yeah. Knowing is half the battle.
That's right. And then as far as recommended reading this week, I had a chance to read 2 books today. I'm going to talk about those with you now. So from Image Comics, we had Middle West number 1. This is written by Scotty Young and drawn by George Corona. For those that are into comics, you've probably heard Scotty's name. He's a very popular artist and writer. Does a lot of cover work for Marvel and has a couple of his own series with Image. So Middle West number 1 is about a kid named Abel, and the book starts off with him having a dream. We don't know it's a dream till we get a couple pages in.
Spoiler.
And obviously, yes, spoilers. This is spoiler filled, so if you don't want to know the short version is go by Middle West, go by Smooth Criminals, and
say,
then turn this off for 5 minutes. I mean, I can't talk about recommended reading without talking about the book.
Well, you could just give a background, because then you're, I don't need to read it if you tell me about it.
All right, so here's the deal. Middle West number one by Scotty Young and George Corona. Go pick it up. Boom Studios, Smooth Criminals number one, written by Kirk Lustgarten and Kirsten Smith. Go pick it up. That's all I'm going to say.
Okay.
Hey, I mean, I can't go over what I had prepared, so.
Oops. Okay.
All right, so, no, honestly, I don't know how to describe them without going into details, but I will say I read both of these books. I enjoyed both of them. I think they're both really great stories. So if you don't want the spoilers, that's fine, but I recommend you go pick them up.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's good. Because if we talk about them, then you don't need to read them. Right. Like, go see this movie and I'll tell you all about it. So, especially like, because we'll do, when we get into Spider-Man, we'll do some spoiler free. But is that it for comic books?
That's it.
All right.
That's my comic book roundup.
If you've seen all the information that's going on with Hugh Jackman and Ryan Reynolds talking about.
Well, yeah, they've got a friendly back and forth that they've got going on social media.
But I think Hugh Jackman's, I think this is all a promotion to, he's coming back as Wolverine. There's so much talk, and he keeps saying, nope, he brings it up. Oh, I'd love to see Wolverine coming back, but I'm not going to do it. Why are you talking about it? There's just so much smoke. There's got to be fire there.
And I hope so. I don't know.
That would be awesome.
We'll see. You know, he did make the comment, you know, when he quit, that he would be down to play Wolverine again if the Avengers, you know, if the Avengers were involved.
Right.
So, you know, who knows? Obviously, in a few months, we will have that scenario available to us. But, you know, you're talking about 5 years or so between the time he puts on the claws, and he's not the youngest of men, so.
No. No.
We'll see.
It will be interesting if they bring him back and somebody else plays the part. That's right. And I feel bad for that guy.
Big shoes to fill. But yeah. You can say that about whoever takes over for Captain America or Iron Man or any of these guys. They've all got huge shoes to step in and fill at some point in time. So
yeah, but Captain America has been, there have been other Captain Americas in the comic books.
Right.
Has anybody else been Wolverine?
Sure they have. You've had Laura Kinney has been Wolverine. X-23.
Yeah, but she wasn't Wolverine. She was just another person that was like that. Correct?
She was the all-new Wolverine. While Logan was dead, she was Wolverine. So, but yeah, just to go back. It depends on what version
though.
Of Captain America they decided. If we got a cinematic version of, say, Sam Wilson as Captain America, that's a different thing.
That's what
but
I mean.
But if you get another Steve Rogers Captain America,
right. That's,
then,
I think,
you know,
that's
you've
what
got
I was...
a... Right. Then you've got big shoes to fill.
Right.
There's obviously other people, you know, there's been other Iron Mans, and, you know, you could bring War Machine back. There's other things you could do, but if you have Tony Stark or Steve Rogers.
Right. That's more to the point. Like another Logan.
Right.
You know. All right. And did you see Birds of Prey got their official title?
I did.
It's like a paragraph.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's a mouthful.
Birds of Prey and the Fantabulous Emancipation of One Harley Quinn.
Sounds like the dude from the comic I talked about last week, Bitterroot.
Yeah.
Berg, he just likes to sit around and talk in big words, so he must have came up with that title for us.
Rocket and Groot, there's rumors they're getting their own show on Disney+.
I didn't see that.
Oh,
that's
you didn't?
Interesting.
Yeah,
no,
supposedly that's in development. That would be fun. Let me see. Young Justice. Did you see that?
Yeah, I knew about that.
Yep.
Season 3. Season 3 is coming to the
coming
DC
out
service.
January 1st on the DC app. That
right.
Would be good.
I love Young Justice. I don't know if you watched that at all. Did you watch the first two seasons?
I've been picking through it. I like it a lot.
Do yourself a favor. It's really good.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I'm picking through it, and again, like that DC app, you can just go through everything. The art on that is just really good.
It is.
it's like movie quality for animation, you know, an animated movie quality. And it's, right. you know, and then you go back and you watch Batman, the animated series, and it's, you know, it's a different type of art, of course, but you just see the difference in time period. So, oh, and what do you think of John Cryer being Lex Luthor on Supergirl?
This is the bright side, so I'm not sure I have anything to say about that. I like John Cryer. I don't know if I see Ducky playing Lex Luthor. So,
yeah, it's, well, everybody keeps showing, every time they show it, like you look at it on Twitter and they show all the pictures of John Cryer as like himself. As like right. the little meek John Cryer, and you're like, and they show like the meekest possible shot of him. It'll be him in a polo shirt or something, and he's just sitting there with a big smile on his face. But that's not Lex Luthor, and he is right. an actor. They're gonna dress him up. I think people are gonna be surprised. I mean, he's an actor. They wouldn't have done this if they didn't want. You know,
I have faith in their casting. You know, they do. They've done a good job with everybody so far, but, you know, I have to see it.
They've done a good job with everyone so far, but I'll be honest with you, I'm not crazy about their Superman. I'm not.
Really? I like him.
I like him. I'm just so, like, the Superman from the movies, I think it's just, and that's why I think they waited, well, I know they had legal issues with bringing him in, but it's just such, he's such a big character to put him on a TV show. My mind is made up it from the movies.
Right.
And I've liked all of them in the movies, but for some reason, I haven't wrapped my brain around it yet on Supergirl. This is falling on deaf ears here with you, but you didn't see the latest Aquaman trailer?
I actually did.
Oh, good.
I did not want to see it, but it was playing during something I was watching. I don't even remember what, but I kind of had no choice but to see it. So I have seen it.
Yeah, I thought it was the best one.
Yeah, it looks great.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see it.
And they announced I saw today that they get the official running time is out, 139 minutes.
Yeah, I saw that, and I saw your tweet.
Yeah.
So basically we still have a whole movie that we haven't seen yet.
Yeah, that should be good. 139 minutes, that's long. It's right in the middle of the DC. It puts it like on average with the DC movies so far. So I'm really looking forward to it. I saw a thing online where they have people that have already seen it and they're giving their reviews, but of course they're all people from, you know, they're DC fans or whatever. So
yeah, actually I remember where I watched DC Daily on Monday. And that's where they showed the trailer.
Yeah.
And, you know, of course, that's one of the things where I guess you can fast forward through it. I didn't even try, but I was kind of,
it was a good trailer. I think it's the best trailer they have. Yeah. I enjoyed the 5-minute one, but that's not really a trailer. That was just,
right.
It looked like a part of the movie that just gave you 5 minutes. Yeah. That trailer was really exciting. They did a really good job on that one. So,
Well, and a lot of people, you know, you and I don't think DC needs to right the ship necessarily when it comes to their movies, but a lot of people do feel that way. But I think that this is going to do it. Like, I read somewhere today that the pre-sales for tickets for Aquaman have already exceeded the pre-sales for Infinity War. So people are excited to go see this movie.
Wow.
That's what I read. Yeah. Now, you can't trust everything you read on the internet, but or that you hear on a podcast said by somebody who read it on the internet.
Yeah,
but that's what I read. So
yeah,
we'll see.
It'll be interesting to see how it plays out because a lot of people are criticizing how much they're hyping it.
Right.
Like so a lot of people say, "Come on, people, less is more," and they're saying, "No, no, no, more is more. Let's keep giving them more."
You get that from the closer you get to every release, you see more and more trailers. It's no different with Marvel or DC.
But this is,
as you got 3 weeks away from Infinity War, there was tons of trailers everywhere. So
they said this is the last one.
I believe it because, you know, we're less than a month or we're right at a month away from from the movie. So if you're an Amazon Prime member, you're 5 days even earlier to the release of the movie, apparently.
Yes. Yep.
And I am an Amazon Prime member, so I might be seeing it on Saturday.
So did you figure out how you do that? Do you go on to Amazon and buy your ticket, or do you just – I haven't figured that out yet.
From what I was reading, there's only certain cinemas that are doing it, and AMC right. is not one of them.
No, you I thought AMC was.
Oh, I'm sorry. Cinemark is not one of them.
Oh, okay.
But Regal Cinemas, which we don't have – Regal Cinemas is not big here in Texas, but the Studio Movie Grill is big here, and that's one of the ones that are doing it. So I haven't gone to their website, but I bet you if you go to Studio Movie Grill's website – there's an option to purchase tickets, and I don't know if you have to log in through Prime. I don't know. I'll be honest with you. I haven't checked into it, but
yeah, I'm going to, because
well, and actually, it probably is closer. We probably need to do it right now.
Oh, that's true.
Before they sell these things out. So if you're listening to this podcast, give me 10 minutes to do it before you, and then go ahead and go on to Amazon and figure it out.
There's not that many Amazon Prime members, are there?
I don't know.
That was a joke.
I mean, I I don't know how many listeners we have. That's more to the point. but hey, we are on iTunes now, so.
Yes. Yeah. So we just picked up 2 listeners.
Oh, fantastic. glad we got on iTunes.
There we go. All right, that should be it. That's all the big stuff for this week. You ready to get into Spider-Man? The Amazing Spider-Man.
The Amazing Spider-Man.
All right, let's do it. Spider-Man, does whatever a spider can, spins a web, any size, catches thieves. Oh, come on, let it play out. Look out, here comes the Spider-Man. Is he strong? Listen, bud, he's got radioactive blood. Can he swing from a thread? Take a look overhead. Hey there goes the Spider-Man. Just in time. All right, how come you didn't sing along?
Oh man, I don't do karaoke, you know that.
Well, neither do I, but, you know, sometimes the rhythm is just going to get you.
The rhythm is going to get you, Gloria Estefan.
Hey, gets the reference.
Miami Sound Machine.
There you go.
All right.
All right, so we're going to do The Amazing Spider-Man. If you don't know, first 5 are called Back to Basics. The writer, Nick Spencer, Humberto Ramos, penciler, Victor Olazaba is the inker. Edgar Delgado, colorist.
Well, actually, the first couple of issues were drawn by Ryan Ottley, and then they switched over to
really?
Humberto Ramos. Yeah, but issue 1 and 2, at least, were Ryan, who I believe is the regular penciler on this. And I'm not sure why Ramos jumped in and did a couple of issues, but Ottley is actually the main artist for this series.
Oh, okay. Every issue, of course, they have the Spider-Man created by Stan Lee and Steve Ditko.
Right.
So we'll start spoiler-free, and we'll go over the first 5. They're up to, what, 9, I think it is now?
Issue 9 just came out last week.
Last week, yeah.
And these are bi-monthly, so they're not...
Yeah.
This isn't a 9-month-old series. You're getting a new issue every 2 weeks, so this relaunched in June, I believe.
Yeah, and issue 1 through 5 is coming out on the 28th.
Yeah, the trade paperback comes out for $15.99. You get the first 5 issues.
What'd you think, first 5?
I think they're awesome. I mean, I really like them a lot. I know we're going to try to talk spoiler-free, so let me tell you, I guess I have to give you a little background. You know me, I don't like to share, but...
No, you don't.
I'm not an oversharer, but I got to give you a little bit of my history with Spider-Man. So obviously, you guys know I'm a longtime comic book reader. Liked lots of books over the years. You know, I've been a big fan of the New Teen Titans, as we talked about, you know, a week or two ago. X-Men were big favorites of mine. Batman has always been a favorite. But right up there with all of them was Spider-Man. Consistently, that is the character I've enjoyed reading the most for the longest amount of time. I loved the X-Men and the new Teen Titans in the 90s and the 80s and, you know, late 80s, early 90s, but they didn't sustain me throughout my entire comic book reading history. But Spider-Man always has been one of my favorites. So I read comics from, I don't know, the time I was 7 or 8 years old until I was about 25. My second child was born, and comics kind of fell away for me by that point. You know, most notably because I just couldn't afford to keep, I couldn't afford to keep up with comics anymore. So I had probably about a, I would say 18-year gap where I was not reading comic books. And lots of things happened to Spider-Man in that 18 years. Most notably, about 10 years ago, a writer named Dan Slott came in and took over The Amazing Spider-Man. And they had a storyline called Brand New Day. And in that storyline, they basically erased all the history between Spider-Man and Mary Jane. And their romance, their marriage, all that stuff, it went away. And it was no longer part of the history of Spider-Man. And lots of things over that 10-year span that Dan Slott wrote Spider-Man changed. He at one point died and was inhabited by the mind of Otto Octavius, yep, who was Dr. Octopus, and that was the Superior Spider-Man storyline. And in that storyline, lots of things changed. You know, Peter Parker became basically Tony Stark Jr., you know, became a billionaire, founder of his own company, Parker Industries. And the core of, to me, what I always loved about Spider-Man changed. So fast forward to, you know, about 5 years ago when I got back into comics again. And, of course, one of the first books I picked up was Spider-Man. And I'm reading Spider-Man, and I have no idea who this character is and what's going on. You know, instead of down on his luck Peter Parker, who can't find the money to pay his rent and, you know, has, you know, nothing goes right for him until he puts on the costume, to this guy who's a tech billionaire and, you know, is living on top of the world, isn't married to Mary Jane anymore. And honestly, it just didn't resonate with me at all. Like, I could not get back into Spider-Man, and it really bummed me out because I loved Spider-Man as a character. Right. So, you know, fast forward again to late 2018, and, you know, Dan Slott is finishing up his run with The Amazing Spider-Man. And he goes out with a bang, you know. And you know, don't get me wrong, this guy wrote Spider-Man for 10 years, and not everything he did was bad. I mean, there were some great stories in there, but he fundamentally changed Spider-Man. Until the end of his run, issue 801 was the end of his tenure on Spider-Man. But honestly, issue 800 is the last one that you need to read, because issue 801 was just a fluff piece. It was really actually a terrible book. And if I was Dan Slott, I would have wanted to go out with issue 800, because that was the high point of his storytelling. But by the end of that issue, he had started to seed some of the foundation for what this new series was going to be. You know, Peter lost Parker Industries. He was no longer this billionaire tech giant. You know, he still had a pretty cushy job. You know, he was made the science editor for the Daily Bugle, and, you know, things were still going all right for him. But some of the things that had been done, he had started to basically deconstruct, and that laid the setting for Nick Spencer and Ryan Ottley to come in and set up their story. Until we get into spoilers, I can't really go into much more than that. But, right, you know, I really felt like I had to kind of lay that out there, because it will come clear to you when we talk about the spoilers why I love this book so much.
Well, I mean,
without all the same history.
It's back right to basics.
And right, but there's still some things in there that you don't, you don't get from that title. But that being said, you know, you don't have quite that history with Spider-Man that I did. And so what, you know, how do you come to it? What are your thoughts when you come to these issues?
Very similar, just a much larger gap. When I was a kid, my first comic book was Spider-Man. And, you know, and from there I branched off when other characters would show up. I liked Batman. I liked Superman. Different reasons. But Spider-Man always resonated with me because Spider-Man was Peter Parker. He was a kid. He got picked on. I was a little kid. I got picked on.
Right.
And so that was like, as a kid, you were like, oh, if I had these powers, you know, a lot of Stan Lee's characters, you know, they were flawed, and you would find, you'd find that flaw in them and find a similarity in your life. And right. Spider-Man just always, Mary Jane was the girl he couldn't catch, you know, so there was always that, he was just that normal kid. And again, as the years go on, it did, it changed. And I would pop in here and there, and I didn't understand the stuff until much later that I was, like you said, like, I don't know what I'm reading. So I didn't read it. I was busy, same as you. Think, you know, life takes over. But when you do come back to it, you start looking around, and it's like, how do I jump back in? And the stories that you, like, Spider-Man was, he was outed, then he's not outed. Then they try to get rid of, they, you know, he almost had like a whole, like a flashpoint type situation early on, and
right,
it just seems like this one, you told me that it's coming out, and I was like, oh, great. And you had already read it, and I was like, oh, this is fantastic. And
right,
again, no spoilers or anything like that, but it, you know, it's in, it's back to basics, and you know, you can, the cover has Mary Jane on it, so you know what you're going to get in here. And it's if you're young and you haven't read Spider-Man from when he was from the 70s, 80s, 60s, 70s, and 80s, this is as close as you're going to get. Plus, they reference all the other stuff. They do a really good job at integrating, and I don't think that's a spoiler. They're bringing you back to basics, but they're not ignoring all the stuff that happened in the past.
No, they didn't undo it, you know, because so many times in comic books, if they want to just turn the page and start over, they just reset everything and start over, and you're kind of left wondering, you know, what's canon and what's not canon, what do I have to read, what don't I have to read. So you're right, they did a very good job of acknowledging everything. They didn't undo anything that happened in the last 10, 15 years.
Right.
But
they haven't referenced everything yet. But they haven't undone anything. They haven't actually mentioned something like, oh, that didn't happen. They have mentioned things, and you're like, oh, look at that. They're bringing it up. And it's, they did a really good job. And some of the stuff they brought up, I didn't know. And they did a really good job of bringing you in as somebody that's, if you are new to this, it brings you up to speed.
Right. And, you know, like I said, this is not the first, you know, Marvel likes to reboot their books. It happens all the time. Since I've been back reading comics 5 years ago, this is the third number one issue for Spider-Man. So going into this, I was not super excited for it because I had been through two new number ones already that didn't really change anything that was going on. It was just a way for them to – number one issues sell comics. Everybody knows that. So it was just basically a way for them to sell more comics. But what they did is the last series – they went back to their legacy numbering, and they kind of figured out all the issues that they've ever done and decided what number they should be on. And they renumbered for, you know, it ended with issue 30 or so. And like the next month it was back as issue, I don't know, 780 or whatever it was. I'm just making up numbers, but it was something like that. And then it ran to issue 800, 801, and then it finished. So going into this, I did like the creative team that they had going on it. I liked Nick Spencer, and I really liked Ryan Ottley. He was coming off of a Image series that he worked on for a long time called Invincible, and I've always liked his art. So I was excited that, you know, for the creative team, but I wasn't expecting anything fundamentally to be any different than what we just finished reading with the last issues of Amazing Spider-Man. But, you know, I'm going to read everything that comes out no matter what. And I picked up this book, and this is no lie, and there's no spoilers here. And it's going to sound hokey coming from a guy that's almost 50, but when I got to the last page of issue number one, I have never been so happy reading a comic book as I was when I got to the end of that book.
Yeah.
And I think I told you that. Like, I read it, and I was like, man, this is – if you want to get back into reading anything, and I've told – and I tell you, as a store owner, I sold more copies of issue number one of that Spider-Man because I read it and I felt that way. And I told everybody that walked in the door, pick up a copy of Spider-Man number one and read it. I haven't had anybody come back to me and tell me they didn't like it.
As a matter of fact, like, you told me about it, so I went to my store, and they didn't have any. They didn't even order any. I asked them for it, so they bought a few, and now they can't keep it on the shelf. People are buying it. And they told me that a few weeks ago. They're like, hey, since you ordered that, we ordered a bunch, and they just keep going out. They hadn't ordered any, which was weird, but it's really good. By the time you get to the end of the first, and the first one is what, like a double issue or something?
It's pretty thick. It's pretty thick. There's a lot of story there. It's got a backup story that sort of relates to the main story once you get through it, but there's a lot of content there. And it is right now my number one selling comic book. And I didn't think anything would take over Batman. Batman is historically the number one seller for me. And I sell now more copies of Spider-Man than anything. And that most of that's built on my own word of mouth. Like, I built that for my store because yeah. I love this book so much. So
nice. All right. You want to get into spoilers?
Yeah.
I know you're dying to.
Well, yeah. Because there's a couple things that I really, you know, I did go back and I reread these yesterday and today. And there's some things I picked up on again that I didn't necessarily pick up the first time around. So I guess to get back into it, you know, like you said, it is called Back to Basics. We get in here and this picks up pretty much where Amazing Spider-Man 801 left off. You know, Peter's working at the Daily Bugle. He's the science editor. He's still pretty happy with what he's got going on in his life. You know, riding high. He's still got the respect, which, you know, I don't know. In real life, I don't know any science editors in any newspapers that have that kind of respect, but apparently in the comic book world, that's a big deal.
Yep.
But, you know, things are still going pretty well for Pete, and he's attending this lecture at Empire State University, where he has his degree from, and one of his old classmates is doing a talk about plagiarism in college today.
Oh,
and
yeah.
How, you know, basically there's so many ways that kids can plagiarize these days, not even including the outlandish ways that some of these people in this book plagiarized, because in the real world we don't have these comic book situations. But, you know, with the advent of the internet, it's not that – it's a lot more common.
Well,
but what I thought – well, real quickly, what I thought was great about it is the title of her presentation was called Brand New Day. And that was the name right. of the storyline by, you know, Dan Slott that basically kicked off the whole undoing of Spider-Man and Mary Jane way back when. So I didn't pick up on that the first time around, but I did pick up on it today. And I thought that was a great – there's no way that's accidental.
No, you know? No, not at all. Yeah. That's pretty cool. Yeah, that whole part where they put his paper in and – They do that. And all right. you have to do is you take one sentence out of a kid's paper, you type it into Google, and you'll find the paper that they copied.
Right.
If it's any, if whatever or whatever piece they copied out of offline, you'll find it. And teachers do that all the time.
Right. But I get the sense that this paper was an original piece. It was just written by somebody else. It's not that it was plagiarized. It's just that it was written by Otto Octavius.
Right.
In the form of Peter Parker.
Right.
So I don't know. I don't necessarily know how the paper picked up on that.
Yeah,
the machine rather. And I love how that this lady just says, "Oh, this machine says it's fraudulent," and everybody in the world just took it as gospel without doing any other research.
Here's the thing: we're into spoilers, so I think right. the whole thing is set up by Kingpin because he's already in this, and it's like before we even get to that. We have that whole scene with Kingpin and how, remember we were talking a couple weeks ago about who the best villain in the MCU is, and people
right,
are like, Thanos, he's more powerful. Well, at the beginning of this, Kingpin's manipulating the Avengers. Kingpin's like, I mean, he is very powerful in this. He's also happens to be the mayor of New York City.
Right, but to my knowledge... But to my knowledge, Kingpin doesn't know that Peter Parker is Spider-Man, so I don't know why he'd be on this crusade to discredit Peter Parker.
Well, we don't know that. I mean...
Well, I don't think he does. Like,
it had that feel, and that's what I wrote down. I was like, when I was
right.
making my little notes, I was like, this really has a feel of, like, Kingpin. And that's probably me just coming out of Daredevil and, you know, but it really feels like he's manipulating something here. The whole story, you know, you start off with Mary Jane. How about Boomerang's his roommate?
Yeah, which is really cool. That becomes more important later on. I think even after issue 5, his storyline expands a bit.
Yeah. It opens up with, you know, the big battle with the Avengers. Right. So you get tons of characters.
Which I thought was awesome that, you know, so it opens with the Avengers and they're fighting these space creatures that are just raining down from the sky. And, you know, they're in this battle and Spider-Man shows up and they're like, oh my God, it's you.
Yeah.
Like, nobody's happy to see him. You know, it's just like, here I am, guys. And they're all like, ugh. Can't believe it's you again.
They make fun of his humor.
Yeah, and it's...
That's pretty prevalent throughout the first 5. He even makes fun of it later on.
It is, like, you know, he has this whole bit where, you know, he made these jokes to the Avengers and they didn't fall, you know, they didn't really go over well. And he goes back to where he used them the first time.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, he's a comedian doing his act out on the... When he's out there...
Yeah, he's like, that killed the last time.
Right. It's like, that's... But I can definitely see that. Like, to me, that's Peter, you know. That's definitely something he would do.
He also referenced Uncle Ben and his humor.
Yeah.
And he says that's where he got his humor from. I'd never seen that before. Have you ever seen that before in the comic?
No. Like, no, I haven't.
I thought that was pretty cool. Because you never really... I never questioned where he got his humor. But
right. You just figured he was always a smart-ass kid, so...
In issue 2...
Well, I just wanted to say real quickly, let's go back, because it's important that we set up that, you know, basically this, you know, him being outed for plagiarizing this paper sets up the, you know, kind of like the systematic downfall of Peter Parker, right?
Right.
You know, they suspend his degree, they take away his, you know, all his credits from school, he loses his job at the Daily Bugle, so... You know, now he's fallen from grace. He's back to basically the beginning of, you know, when you first started reading Spider-Man, you've got this down on his luck guy. Nothing goes right for him. And, you know, he doesn't know where he's going to pay the rent or get his next meal from. And now we're back there, you know, back to basics. It's like through that this chain of events, like we've got Peter Parker back to the beginning. You know, once again, he doesn't have a job. You know, he's going to be begging Jameson to let him take pictures of Spider-Man again. And, you know, basically everybody in his life is kind of turning him out. You know, he goes and he talks to Aunt May and she, you know, tells him how disappointed she is. And, you know, he's really kind of back to that down on his luck guy that kind of permeates through the next couple of issues that's the way things are going to go for him. And,
yeah.
You know, I didn't want to gloss over that because I think that's an important part of the story.
Yeah, but what I was going to say was by issue 2, like Mary Jane, she to me was like the reader. She was the conduit for us. Like she was asking the questions that we would ask.
Right.
But that being said, she's also the one constant in his life, the one good thing. She never went away. Even Aunt May doubted him. Right. Even Aunt May was like, so he got found out to be, quote, a liar, like you said. Everybody in the world questioning him, and even Aunt May questioned him for a short time. But
right,
Mary Jane never did.
No, but she also has the luxury of knowing he's Spider-Man. So he can confide in her in a way that he can't confide in Aunt May. Like, if he would have told Aunt May, well, this is what happened, because Otto, you know, she wouldn't have felt that way about him either. It's just the fact that he has to hide himself from her, and he can't really explain. Where Mary Jane's reaction was great, because, you know, you see him telling the story, and you don't necessarily know on the first page who he's talking to, and then you turn the page, and it's Mary Jane, and she's laughing in his face, like, you know, what a dumbass you are, you know?
And that's why I felt like she's like us, She's like the reader, and that's how they're getting us the information. It's like he's telling Mary Jane all about it. He even blames himself.
Right.
You know, he says, like, look, I knew it wasn't me. I could have told them that wasn't me. I could have ended this a long time ago. He goes, but I didn't.
Right. You know? Well, he has a great line that I really liked, and that it's not that I do the wrong thing, it's just that I don't do the right thing. And I really like that. That's a really powerful statement when you think about it, because, you know, not to get too deep, but I mean, how many times in your own life can you say that?
Oh, yeah.
It's like, you know, it's not that I did the wrong thing, but I didn't step up and do what was right either.
Right.
So, that's a big thing. And, I thought it summed it up pretty succinctly what had happened with him. So,
yep. Jumping ahead to end of issue two. When they separate,
right,
and you're like Peter Parker and Spidey become two,
right,
bringing you back. They bring what was the machine called? The original machine that created them.
Yeah, I don't know. I want to say the particle accelerator, but I think that's more the Flash or CW or something.
But
I don't know. But
and again, back to basics. They bring back the exact same machine that created Spider-Man in the first place, and he bumps into it, and boom. Now you find out that he's two people.
Right. And this is a machine that, you know, was actually, you know, it was developed by Kurt Connors, who's the Lizard, who is trying to basically come up with a way to separate himself from the Lizard. And, of course, you know, our hero Peter, as true in comic books, turns the tables and it happens to him instead of,
right?
You know, instead of the Lizard.
Yeah, he just
bumps into it. But what's funny is he doesn't know that it's happened until he gets saved by himself.
Right. And they spend issue three telling you what a great thing it is.
Right.
He's all excited, like, oh, this is good. I can have the life I want with Mary Jane, and Spider-Man can be off saving the city.
Right, which goes as, again, we didn't necessarily cover it, but I guess we should go back and say, by the end of issue one, you know, the big reveal, or the thing that made me super happy was that, you know, Mary Jane and Peter were getting back together. You know, which is, like I said, that's a big thing, because for so many years in the comics, they haven't been together, and as a longtime reader, you know, like I said, that just made me super happy to see. You know, and that's, like I said, going forward, now Peter, you know, thinks he's going to, you're right, he's going to be able to have the life he wants with Mary Jane, and they're not going to have to deal with all the crime fighting and all that stuff. And Spider-Man, you know, doesn't want to have to spend time doing anything normal in life.
Who is he?
Right.
Like, he's Spider-Man, but that was a weird separation for me. Like, Peter Parker, I get. Peter Parker's Peter Parker. He's a normal person. He walks around. Where does Spider-Man eat?
You almost get the sense, like, I don't know that we saw, and I don't remember.
He had endorsement deals.
Right, but did we ever see him with the mask off?
No.
We didn't, right? So you wonder, like, what's under the mask? Is there even a person under there?
Right.
Because if he's just the personification of Spider-Man, what's there? You know, do you take that mask off and you just have, like, a blank, like a mannequin or something?
Yeah.
Like, who knows? Because who is Spider-Man without Peter Parker as a kid, you know, as an individual?
That's what we get into
issue four, right.
Issue four, and that's where it got really deep for me, because what you find out is, well, of course they had with Doc Connors.
Right.
They had an incident with two mice, or a mouse that became two mice. And then they come to find out that they were acting differently, but you also saw Peter start to act differently.
Right.
He wasn't loving science anymore. He didn't have the knowledge of science. Obviously,
well, he couldn't remember. Right.
Right. He obviously didn't have the spider powers anymore. Couldn't do anything.
Right.
But he was losing he was losing his humor too. He wasn't as funny. He was losing all those things. But Spider-Man, he's destroying the city. You know, he's not being careful about looking out for, you know, innocent bystanders and stuff. He's just going out and saving people and damaging other people's property, hurting other people. Just, collateral damage. That's, you know, so he didn't have what turned out to be, like, the conscience of Peter Parker.
Right. Well, you know, you've heard it a million times. If you've read Spider-Man once, you've seen this if you've seen it once, you've seen it 1,000 times. With great power comes great responsibility. So without that conscience, you have a character that doesn't have that responsibility. He just has that great power. And
right.
So what happens when that goes unchecked? you know, you start to see that, you know, there is no regard for necessarily the things, the property, even the individual people aren't as important as just the goal of stopping the villain of the week. And consequences be damned. Like, it just doesn't matter because it's all about just stopping this threat that's here.
Yeah. And what I got all excited about, I'm reading this and, you know, back in college, I loved taking psychology classes, and I run upstairs, talk to my wife, and right. I'm like, am I right? Ego?
Yeah, the
super ego?
Right.
I'm like, that's what this is. It's like they basically, you know, if you're a little kid or a younger kid, you're reading this. By the time you go and take psychology, you're going to be like, hey, I remember reading about this in Spider-Man. It's right. Like, because Peter Parker is your super ego, I believe. And then you have Spider-Man is the id, and then your ego is the two of them together.
Right.
And you can't live without them together, according to Freud. That's all theory. But I'm like, they're going over the whole thing, and I was blown away. I was like, oh, going back to my psychology days, it was a lot of fun. Of course, by the end of four, are they going to get back together and stuff? And the one thing that I would say is, like, when you get into five, it happens pretty quick.
It does.
They get
it
back
felt
together.
Like they had to wrap that storyline up so they could move on to the next one.
And yeah.
And I think it could have benefited from maybe one more issue.
Yeah. I felt the same way. And it's like, I feel like that a lot, though. Like, you'll get into a story on, like, a CW show, and you'll be like, oh, when's Oliver getting out? And then he shows up. Oh, there he
right.
is.
It feels like
wait a minute.
They just rush to the end a lot of times.
Yeah, I wasn't surprised by it, but yeah, I just thought it was like, hey, there it is.
But that goes back to what we talked about when we were talking about Daredevil and how many episodes you got, right? Because if you're really enjoying the story and you like what's happening, you always feel like you just want more. And at a certain point, if it went six issues, we still would have felt like, well, maybe we could have got seven. So.
Yeah.
At a certain point, they have to wrap things up. But you're right. It did feel like – because we go through the whole thing in issue four, and Peter realizes that they have to get back together, because I think by that point they knew that, you know, the mice didn't survive separately. And, you know, they were going to die. Like, if they didn't get back together, they were going to die, and they weren't going to be able to survive. So then you get to issue five, and you're right. In 17 pages or so – you're done. You know, everything's
it's all
back to normal.
Wrapped up in a bow.
Right. Right. So, but you know, that's comic books. It's always been that way. It'll always be that way.
So, I think you alluded to it earlier. In starting in episode one, they had a little, like, separate story going on.
Right.
Like a little, you know, guy in a jungle. And when I saw that, I got really excited. I was like, oh, I hope this is...
Right.
Then it was funny. When I started issue five, they didn't have it at the beginning. And I actually noted that. I was like, wait a minute. Where they started, I think, 2, 3, 4 with this little side story that had nothing. It apparently had nothing to do with what was going on. It was like, what, a page? Page and a half,
right,
maybe?
Right. Just the first maybe two pages of each
right.
issue.
It was even drawn a little differently. You knew it was a side story. And so, again... Issue five, you open up and you're like, oh, where is that? And it was gone. Halfway through the issue, you forgot you missed it.
Right.
And then, bam, the last page, there he is, Kraven, standing there. I was like, I knew it! And it's like, I love when you're reading a comic and you flip the page and you like want to yell at the screen.
Right.
You know, you're like, yeah! And they did that a bunch in this. I thought there were a bunch of surprise page turners that you were just like, oh, that was awesome. That, I think in issue one when they show the Avengers.
Right.
And you flip the page and there's just this huge battle going on. It was like almost like going around the corner of a building in an Infinity War and you watch the battle.
Exactly. You're just walking into it.
Yeah. And it's the entire, you know, I wish we could have said more like that in the non-spoiler section, because there's just so much of that. There's so much of that. It's just really well drawn and really well written and paced out per page that, you know, it a page turner.
Right. Well, the whole thing is just super fun. You know, you really get the feeling that you know, again, not to go back to Dan Slott, and I don't want to take away from anything that he does because he did a lot of good stuff, but you just feel like Nick Spencer really has a fondness for Spider-Man and really, you know, kind of gets the character. To me, it's really been a lot of fun to read these issues. The art has been very complimentary to the story, I think, even though we've had two different artists in the first five issues that we're talking about. And it just continues on. I know we're not going to go past issue 5 necessarily today, but they're on issue 9. So the next couple of issues, even after this, you know, you really kind of flesh out the Boomerang character. And, you know, they spend some time in a bar hanging out, him and Peter. And, you know, by the end of it, Peter's kind of thinking maybe he's not the worst guy in the world. So, you know, there's two sides to every story. And, you know, it's really been a lot of fun, and I look forward, every 2 weeks it's the first book I want to pick up and read. Yeah. Like, I really think it's just great, and so far they haven't let me down, so.
Yeah, I love the two-week pacing. I came into it a few weeks, well, like, what, two months?
Yeah, you were, they were, what, 4 or 5 issues in by the time you picked it up?
Yeah, but then you just, oh, okay. And that brings me back to...
Yeah, my wallet doesn't like the every 2 week pacing, but the story part of me does.
Yeah, but that brings me back to when I was a kid. And it's when I picked up Spider-Man. So you remember... Well, you didn't grow up with me when we were really little.
No, and I don't think we really met until high school.
High school. Yeah. And did you have a comic book store, per se? Or did you have like a... I had a newsstand.
I
had
did.
A pretty good comic section.
I did have a comic book store, but they didn't sell new comics. There was a... It was actually in the back of a jewelry store, and they were only open for comics on Saturdays. This thing was open all the time, but the owners had their own personal collection that they sold out of the back room on Saturdays. And it was almost kind of one of those... You had to know a guy who knew a guy, like... Yeah. I don't even know how you found out. I found out about this, but you know, my mom would take me up on the weekends and drop me off, and I would spend a couple of hours on Saturday going through the old comics. But for new issues, it was either the drugstore or the grocery store. You know, it was back then. Yeah. You know, you could still buy comics off the rack. So
we had the newsstand uptown.
Right. And yeah.
Before I had a paper route, I know
it well.
Have an allowance.
Right.
And go up there. I'd be able to go up there. Either my dad would take me up or, you know, he'd go up to get the paper. And I would look at, you know, the spinner rack. And that's where they kept the newer stuff.
Right.
And I just remember going, like you said, this comes out every 2 weeks. And I remember going up there and you'd see the same issue that you already had.
Right.
And then when there was a fresh one, you're like, you know, you couldn't wait. Can I get this? Can I get this? And it was just... That, to me, is like, that was so much fun. And that's what this stuff does. It's like, this one here, it's like every 2 weeks you get back to that.
Right. Well, and that's actually, you know, as a kid, I don't know if we've ever talked about this. Did you know that my grandfather owned the news store?
No.
Yeah, so when I was a kid,
the
that
was... The newsstand up in the center of town?
Franklin News was my family's business when I was a kid. My grandfather owned and ran that place, and that's where I got my first comic books as a kid, was hanging out there. But yeah, as a kid, my father, my grandfather, my uncle, they all worked there my whole life. You know, my father, when they were kids, you know, obviously as adults, they didn't work there anymore. And, you know, my grandfather sold it when I was pretty young, but.
Oh, all right.
But as a kid, that's where we got all my, that's where I
was like,
my
how would I not know that?
Yeah. I would hang out there and read comics. So.
Yeah.
That was really my first exposure to it.
Yeah. When I finally got a paper route and. I was probably 11, and I was riding my – I'd have to go uptown to pay the paper company.
Right.
And then I'd go right to the newsstand and probably lose all my money on – you know, the $5 I made that week would all be gone.
Yeah, but back then, $5 got you about 50 comic books. Well, maybe not, but you got at least 10 you got at least 10 comics with your $5.
Yeah. Well, I probably got a soda and a candy bar too.
Yeah. Now you get one comic and 68 cents back. But.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. So, but yeah, this one here, it definitely brings you back. And the back to basics is perfect. What's the title of the second one? Do you remember?
Don't remember.
I don't remember.
Yeah,
how.
I don't know.
But definitely worth picking up. Well, if you're listening right now, You did pick it up, I hope. So,
well, yeah, hopefully. Otherwise, we ruined it. But, yeah. You know, the first couple issues now are getting tougher to find, you know, since they're into issue 9 now. But like we mentioned, the trade paperback, comes out in a couple of weeks. And you can pick up the first 5 issues through that for, you know, $16. And you shouldn't have too much trouble picking up issues 6 through 9 after that. So definitely, if you can't get the individual issues, go in and pick up the trade paperback and get caught up that way.
All right. Does that wrap it up for this week?
Yeah, I think so. You know, like I said, obviously I could talk about Spider-Man forever, but...
Yeah, I could, get into all my past stories. And...
Yeah.
But I would like to thank, for the music that you're hearing right now in the background, I'd like to thank Jeff Bernhard at the Throne Vault. Throne Vault Productions, they're helping us out with our music. My brother's actually writing the lyrics, wrote the lyrics. They just have to get together. He has to get together with his buddy and put everything together. So, but yeah, Dave, I love the music. I think it's great.
I do too. Thanks, guys. It's awesome.
Yeah, and my brother's like, oh, I think it sounds good the way it is. We don't need the lyrics. I think, but no, when you see the lyrics, I think it's going to go good with... with what we do.
I would agree that I think the music stands on its own, but having seen the lyrics too, I definitely want them in there.
Yeah, it's going to be fun.
Actually, we had them somewhere in one of our earlier episodes.
Did we?
I think so.
Oh, okay. I don't remember putting them
out. I think in the first one or two, we had an a cappella version in there somewhere.
I think I just texted that to you. I don't know if we actually...
No, I don't know. Go Did back we? And listen. I think it's in there somewhere.
I'll have to listen for it.
You listeners are going to have to go back and listen to all the early episodes now.
Oh boy.
I know. I'm sorry. I apologize now. But.
All right. You can follow us on Twitter, email us, tweet at us, email us, please. Let us know what you think. Any questions, any comics you want us to read, that would be great. Any comic book movies that I still haven't gotten to finish Tusk yet.
I was going to ask you if you ever finished that, because...
No, because Jen wants
still,
to watch it
I'm
now.
I'm still so anxious.
We'll do that next week, I promise.
I was thinking about it driving home from work today, as a matter of fact. I was going to ask you if you'd watched that yet.
Yeah, no, I haven't finished it yet. I got about halfway through it, and then Jen said she wanted to watch it with me. So
yeah,
but yeah, we'll talk about. I promise I'll finish that by next week. I don't know what we're talking about next week. What do you want?
I don't
do
know either.
Week?
But hey, one more thing that you were remiss because I thought for sure you would bring it up. The Elseworlds trailer with Ruby Rose that showed up on Arrow this week.
I did. I had that in my notes, and I think I scrolled by it accidentally. We had so much stuff going on. That was awesome. That trailer was really good. I think, again, remember I said during DC Titans, you watch the behind-the-scenes stuff?
Right.
And it doesn't do it justice till you see it, like, filmed, the actual finished product. And those pictures of her were great.
Right.
But seeing that trailer, and then did you notice it was Barry Allen as Arrow?
Yeah, well, I knew that,
that was pretty,
because
yeah, I
I've
knew
been
that was coming,
that,
but that was the first time you saw it. And he spoke,
right?
He was like, "What did he say? That's not Batman or something like that?"
Right. So obviously, once again, acknowledging Batman is alive and well in this universe, even though we're probably never going to see him.
What universe are they in, though? Because
who knows?
We don't know.
The Arrow, they're in the Arrowverse. That's all we know.
Yeah, but Supergirl is in one world. One
Earth.
Yeah,
we don't know
what
actually
world they're on yet.
Well, but we do know. I mean, Ollie has referenced Bruce Wayne several times. Like, Batman's been referenced more than once in the
They're clearly on another world because, you know, Barry Allen is the Arrow and Oliver Queen is the Flash, or at least, according to one of the commercials, they don't even know. Somehow they get swapped, because you see the one where Oliver is like kissing Iris.
Yeah,
but but she thinks she's seeing Barry.
Right,
but he knows he's not Barry, so it's not a matter of they're just the wrong or the right people in the right costumes. It's like it's a whole mind shift thing. I don't know.
Yeah, there's no telling. I guess we won't know till we see it, but. Hopefully it does well, because I definitely want to see, you know, I know this is sort of the backdoor pilot to see how successful Batwoman's going to be, you know, in relation to her own series. So
I said before, you know, I think that show's going to end up taking over for Arrow. It's
probably
going to take the slot.
They haven't said for sure whether, you know, this is going to be the last season of Arrow or not, but the speculation's out there. This is what, season 7. So, you know, there's a point where it could be wrapping up. And even with the season that they're having with Arrow this year, you kind of wonder where they're leading everything to, because, you know, you have a lot of time jumping going on, and, you know, we don't know where we don't know where Ollie and Felicity or any of these people are in the near future, so.
Right.
Spoilers.
Spoilers, yeah, so.
If you've gone this deep into the show, spoilers be damned.
All right. So catch us on Twitter at @thebrightside_chat. You can email us at thebrightsidechat@gmail.com, on iTunes at The Brightside Chat, Google Play, search us by The Brightside Chat, and Facebook.
Facebook.com/TheBrightsideChat.
Nice. All right. That should do it for this week. Thanks for hanging in.
Yeah. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Happy Thanksgiving. Hey, Fred.